Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a reaction to the outbursts of Islamophobia on Fox News and elsewhere in response to the Boston bombings. Amjad Mahmoud Khan, who is the National Director of Public Affairs for the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community, joins us. He has testified three times before the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission at the U.S. House of Representatives about persecution of religious minorities in the Islamic world, and we will discuss the backlash America's Muslims are experiencing to the bombings. Then we'll speak with Middle East expert Juan Cole, who writes the popular blog Inform Comment at juancole.com, where he has an article, Terrorism and Other Religions, in which he compares the casualties of political violence in the 20th century, where Muslims killed 2 million people compared to Christian Europeans who killed 100 million. We will discuss further the backlash of Islamophobia against American Muslims who live in a country where murder rates are sky high compared to those in the Muslim world. Then finally, we will examine the collapse of an 8-story building in Bangladesh that killed up to 90 low-wage garment workers making clothes for European and U.S. high-end brands. Charles Kernighan, who is the Executive Director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights, joins us to discuss this latest in a series of fatal accidents in the world's second biggest garment exporter and the anti-sweatshop movement in the U.S. that he has launched. And joining us now is Amjad Mahmoud Khan, who is the National Director of Public Affairs for the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community. He's a frequent lecturer on the Islamic world, human rights, law, and governance. His writings have appeared in the Harvard Human Rights Law Journal, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Christian Science Monitor, and the New York Daily News. A lawyer based in Los Angeles, he has testified three times before the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission at the United States House of Representatives about the persecution of religious minorities in the Islamic world. Welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Amjad Mahmoud Khan.
Thanks for having me.
And clearly, since the Boston bombings, at least the two perpetrators have been revealed, and every day there's more and more indications that at least the older brother was radicalized, although the younger brother has just said that they were acting more out of their upset over U.S. foreign policy, particularly what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan. There was no question that the older brother was radicalized in his Islamic beliefs to the point where at the local mosque he was disruptive. But on the other side, of course, we've had this rash of Islamophobia that's come out before, after, and during this event. So as a Muslim, how are you feeling at the moment?
Well, Ian, it's a very difficult time, and there are complicated facts here. But, you know, on one hand, I feel sort of how I felt the days after the September 11th attacks. I was actually those were my first days at Harvard Law School. It was 10 days into law school when those attacks happened. At that time, there was very little knowledge by mainstream Americans about Islam, and the attacks happened, and I was just shocked because as an American Muslim who grew up in the United States, it was painful to, of course, just as with all Americans, to see such a heinous attack in such dramatic form, and then I was doubly pained because it was committed by those who purported to be Muslim. This past week was difficult. I mean, I've been in those streets in Cambridge. I spent 3 years of my life there. I know those neighborhoods. Boston is a very strong city. Cambridge is a very strong and vibrant city. These individuals, when it was revealed that they were the alleged perpetrators, I felt sad. I knew that there would be some, renewed backlash against Muslims and against Islam because of the backgrounds of these gentlemen. But at the same time, I feel like we've come a long way since the attacks of September 11th. I think that it's true that Islamophobia may be on the rise, but I think the general understanding of Islam is much more improved than it was 10 years ago. And I think the vast majority of Americans understand that it's wrong to scapegoat, it's wrong to stereotype, and they can differentiate and disassociate, decouple the acts of these two individuals, which were nefarious, from the faith itself, which is followed by, you know, over a billion people.
Well, of course, we have the example of a recent incident that was apparently avoided in Canada, where a couple of radicals had planned on blowing up a train in Canada, and they were actually informed on by the Muslim community in Canada because they were seen as having become radical. So what happened at the mosque where the older brother had these outbursts over Martin Luther King being mentioned? He was clearly out of step with his congregation because they apparently censured him. But my understanding is that he was radicalized by somebody who's called Misha, somebody in Cambridge that he knew who is apparently of Armenian descent. So I'm trying to get a picture on the journey this fellow took in the name of Islam into an area that, of course, is causing you, as a Muslim, a lot of chagrin and backlash.
Right. I mean, as a lawyer, I'm always weary of making sure, you know, the facts are, you know, verified, and I'm not certain of the impetus behind the change in Tamerlan Tsarnaev, and clearly something changed within him over time, and his 6 month journey and overseas perhaps influenced his change and certainly his hold on his younger brother. I don't know who in Cambridge, or if anyone in Cambridge who is a Muslim, was responsible for this change. What we do know is that he did have, it is verified that he did have a shouting match at a Jummah Friday service in Cambridge, and it was very intriguing because I think the imam who was giving the sermon was talking about emulating the life and teachings of Martin Luther King and perhaps drawing some analogies to the Prophet Muhammad, and he immediately stood up in the middle of the sermon, which is, you know, most Muslims know is just, you know, breaching all etiquette, and shouting down the imam as saying that we shouldn't emulate this man and it's hypocritical to compare him with the Prophet Muhammad. So there was some type of an incident there, and the way I see this is that, you know, I'm very particular about there's a problem with the terminology employed by individuals in the media and otherwise about Islam after attacks such as this. I mean, I understand that the word radical or radicalization or Islamic radicalism or Islamic extremism, these phrases are often used. But I think that we need to be quite careful about that. I mean, I know that there are fringe commentators, you know, who may employ those. I mean, I think the other day Ann Coulter, who's, you know, a conservative lightning rod, said something like, you know, because, Tamerlan Tsarnaev's wife wears the hijab, that itself is punished, she should be punished and put to jail just for wearing the hijab. But what I get nervous about is when very well-respected journalists from mainstream media employ careless and clumsy terminology. For example, Tom Brokaw on Meet the Press said that, you know, Islamic rage hasn't gone away, and this is evidence of it. I mean, the words Islamic rage, I mean, the way I see this is, you know, these gentlemen, their attacks, you know, they were just such a militant perversion of Islam. They're such a departure from Islam. They may be rooted in some aspect of thought from some radical groups who interpret the Quran, but they shouldn't be coupled with the religion itself. And I think people like Tom Brokaw wouldn't be using those phrases if it was a Christian and say Christian rage or Jewish rage. And I think it really does a disservice. So my view is it's very important we scrutinize and understand what happened here, and the influences, the influencers, the enablers, they should be held accountable. But at the same time, we all have a responsibility to sift facts from fiction and make sure we get the story straight and make sure we not, defame an entire faith or make it more difficult for American Muslims to live their faith. I mean, I feel more responsible to stop this type of ideology than I would think anyone else, because, I'm an American Muslim and I'm proud of both being an American and a Muslim. And I feel responsible to try to make sure that the moderates drown out the extremists. But we, you know, everyone goes backwards when mainstream media uses terminology such as Tom Brokaw did, like Islamic rage, or you know, for example, saying things like, CNN analyst, for example, yesterday, I think it was 2 days ago, said that there's an increasing religious radicalization of Tsarnaev. Why? Because he prayed five times a day, and he had allegedly had a beard. Well, that's about 95% of Muslim males pray five times a day and have a beard, or wear a headscarf if you're a woman. So does that make you radical? It's nothing radical about praying five times a day. I did it today. I mean, every Muslim does it.
Sure. Again, I'm speaking with Amjad Mahmoud Khan, who is the National Director of Public Affairs for the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community. He's a frequent lecturer on the Islamic world, human rights, law, and governance, a lawyer based in Los Angeles. He has testified three times before the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission at the United States House of Representatives about the persecution of religious minorities in the Islamic world. Now, as a journalist, I would like to have a term that I could use. What is the correct term to use in terms of describing this fellow, the older brother in particular, who was possibly, we're not entirely sure, that he was acting in the name of Islam, but he was certainly influenced, apparently, according to his younger brother, speaking yesterday, or writing yesterday, because he can't speak very well, saying that they were really motivated more by the wars against Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan. So he's at least invoking the cause of Islam.
I think what's important to separate Islam from Muslims, I think there's nothing wrong with calling the individual radical or harboring beliefs that are extreme. But what he's influenced by, if you really probe it deeply, are individuals who purport to claim the mantle of leadership in the Islamic world and project a xenophobic ideology that they claim somehow is rooted in Islam. And he's enabled by that, by the rhetoric, by what is being said about the West. The younger brother said, that really it was the U.S. foreign policy in Iraq and Afghanistan that really upset the individuals to such an extent that they felt like there was a perpetual war. And yes, it is true that possibly, the motivation here is behind what he believes is a deep sense of religious fervor. But that's being projected by certain Muslims who, in my estimation, are perverting Islam. So to use phrases like Islamic extremism or Islamic, radicalism or Islamic rage, I think that's just clumsy. I think it's more important to focus on the individual narratives and speeches and actions of the so-called religious clerics, Muslim clerics, and what they're saying than the faith itself. And that's just my quibble. I mean, I'm not trying to hair split here, but I do feel like words matter, and it really makes it difficult for American Muslims to come out and condemn acts when we have a two-front battle and we're dealing with trying to deal with people who are trying to hijack our faith, but at the same time, the mainstream media is putting Islam backwards when we're spending a lot of time explaining basic things like why women wear the headscarf or why we pray five times a day, which is, Islam 101.
Well, what you said earlier, though, Amjad Mahmoud Khan, about how this affects you personally, how when your religion is usurped by these people and it creates the backlash through the failures of the press to frame things correctly. And, of course, there's also the other aspect of Islamophobes in Fox News in particular who have been really saying outrageous things, including the token liberal they have on there, Bob Beckel, and O'Reilly went completely off the deep end last night. You've got Pat Robertson comparing Islam to Nazism, etc. So this is what's going on. But the point that you made, I think, is the key, and that is that no Christian or Jew can dissuade somebody like a Tamerlan from taking this path that he took. The only person that can do that is a moderate Muslim or somebody that can sort of bring him back onto the correct path. And that seems to me that the fact that this affects you personally would indicate to me that as a society, we should be treating people like you as our front line of defense, if you will, in the sense that your community are the people that we should be working with to solve this problem as opposed to scapegoating.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, we worked very hard, you know, as Ahmadi Muslims. I mean, our community is one of the oldest communities in America. And, you know, we've worked very hard in not just talking about moderation, but actually, you know, walking the walk. I mean, we've done so many activities in the past, you know, decade or even, I mean, dating back, you know, a century, really, to try to, you know, overcome this view, you know, this erroneous view that extremism is latent in our faith. I mean, and really, you're right. I mean, moderate Muslims are the solution. And it's not, I mean, I think a lot of American Muslims will say, well, that's what we've been doing for a decade. But, you know, I do take some exception to, you know, an overly defensive posture by the American Muslim community. I mean, I do, as a civil rights lawyer, human rights lawyer, I understand and keenly aware of rising Islamophobia. I've defended American Muslims in court and civil liberties cases, you know, testified in Congress. But I do feel that that's one aspect of the narrative, and it's not very productive to spend 100% of one's time, you know, claiming that we're victims. I mean, the reality is there is a cancer within this beautiful faith of ours, but perpetrated by a tiny minority of individuals who are quite vocal and influential. And it would be unfair of us to deny that reality. So what are we doing about it? What can we do about it? And my view is it's important to really define, you know, what the faith stands for on key issues and really, you know, have some central leadership. Our community is, I think, the one of very few Muslim communities that's united by a single leader. And, you know, he preaches every Friday against extremism. He's done it, you know, for years and years and years. And you know, he's coming shortly here in Los Angeles, you know, in a few weeks, and his first trip to the West Coast. And I'm sure he'll be discussing what he did at Capitol Hill last year and at the European Parliament, that the challenge of extremism is the challenge of our time as Muslims. And we must eradicate extremism. And we do it by actually, you know, in a manner that is a bloodless intellectual struggle to take back our faith from those who perpetrate a very violent view of it. And, you know, the Pakistani Taliban butchered and massacred 86 Ahmadi Muslims in 2010. This was the same group that trained Faisal Shahzad, who was responsible for the attempted, you know, bombing in Times Square. So clearly, you know, the people who are against America are also butchering moderate Muslims. I mean, more Muslims have been killed by quote-unquote, you know, Islamic terrorists than non-Muslims. I mean, so really it comes down to empowering the moderate among us and forging alliances and really taking this insidious evil head on.
Well, given, Amjad Mahmoud Khan, that you've testified for the House Human Rights Commission of the U.S. House of Representatives on a number of occasions about the persecution of religious minorities in the Islamic world, give us a sense. You just mentioned your sect being persecuted in Pakistan. The Sufis were also driven out of the Swat Valley and murdered, and hardly a day goes by without the Shia minorities being blown up by Sunni radicals. And what is driving this? And obviously, you have this proxy war, in effect, between the Sunnis and the Shia with Iran versus Saudi Arabia going on. But my understanding is that a lot of what's going on in Pakistan is being fueled and financed by the Saudi Wahhabis, who are, you know, in many ways are very intolerant and seem to consider the Shia worse than heretics.
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation. I mean, I think, as an initial matter, you know, there are 72 different kinds of Muslims. You know, there's incredible complexity and nuance within the larger Islamic world. And, you know, I mean, you know, Muslims are Arabs, Muslims are non-Arabs, you know, Muslims, you know, hail from so many countries, you know, 56 or 58 Muslim countries. And there's just such complexity. And it's important that, you know, voices that are often not projected as mainstream also get heard. And I think what happens is you have, you know, you do have sectarian strife in some Muslim countries, particularly in Pakistan. And it's, you know, I think it's driven largely by, you know, a political worldview, you know, that's enmeshed with the religious state. You know, it's kind of amazing that Pakistan, you know, for example, is the only Islamic country in the world that actually has a constitutional amendment that, you know, declares a particular community of Muslims to be non-Muslim. It actually is the only constitution that defines who is or is not a Muslim for purposes of the law, which is fascinating. You know, I mean, it's the idea that a state can define who is or is not a Muslim when that's an intensely personal issue. Really, I think the source of the problem is when statecraft and the Constitution actually pick sides as to who is a Muslim and who is not, then everyone suffers from that. That's what's happened to the Ahmadi Muslim community, certainly in Pakistan. That's why my parents fled Pakistan, in the early 70s. That's why it continues to be very difficult for the millions there to exist and live. But I think that the hope here is the next generation of Muslims, the younger generation. I consider myself in that generation at 34, but people who have like-minded understanding, who've grown up and understand universal human rights and values and understand the value of diversity within one's ranks and alternate points of view, that there's a coalition formed among like-minded people who have the energy and passion to really view Muslims in their own ranks, you know, as Muslims if they're self-identifying as such, and focus on what is being said and projected and try to isolate the extreme view. I don't think any American Muslim, you know, was proud of what happened in Boston. I think it's just absolutely tragic. It's heart-wrenching. And it's particularly heart-wrenching to see Zohar, the younger of the two brothers, living this very typical American life, you know, and succeeding and doing well in school, and people are vouching for him, and he didn't spend time abroad, and yet he has devolved because of the influence of his brother. It's a tragedy, and I think it's important that we understand that the tolerance level needs to be very high between and among Muslims and be united in order to fight this cause. And we feel as a community united by a single leader, we have an advantage on that front.
Well, Amjad Mahmood Khan, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Amjad Mahmood Khan, who is the National Director of Public Affairs of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community. He is a frequent lecturer on the Islamic world, human rights, law and governance, a lawyer based in Los Angeles. He has testified 3 times before the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission at the United States House of Representatives about the persecution of religious minorities in the Islamic world. And we're going to take a brief station break, and we're back continuing the conversation about Islamophobia with Juan Cole.